Welcome to the Travelling Senorita, episode 176. Today I have got the pleasure of interviewing the executive chef of where I've just stayed, which is the newly refurbished Playford Hotel. I have been here 10 years ago and probably 10 years prior, and it has now got a nice lightness to it. It's been refurbished and it's still got that history and the stately feel, but with a contemporary edge. And we also were welcomed to an incredible meal the first night we arrived at the newly appointed restaurant, which is called Luma, meaning light. So the executive chef here, his name is Cameron Tabe, and he's all things Adelaide, which is perfect for my story on Adelaide. Hello, Cameron.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Welcome. Now, we're going to start where you grew up, because I think it's really important in Adelaide, for the East Coast particularly, to paint the picture of the landscape here. I mean, we have this stunning peninsula, and we kind of, people come to Adelaide and they go, oh yeah, lovely food, wine, visit a couple of wineries, but they miss the whole peninsula where you grew up. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Port Lincoln, which is on the Eyre Peninsula. There's about three peninsulas within South Australia. Basically, peninsula is just where it meets at a point.
So,
I'm originally from Port Lincoln, which is, for food lovers out there, about 30 minutes from Coffin Bay. Coffin Bay, obviously known for its oysters, just a small town of about 500 people, Coffin Bay. Port Lincoln has about 10,000 people. Smoky Bay oysters, about 3 hours up the road. And then obviously the farm, Kingfish, comes from Arno Bay, about an hour away from Port Lincoln.
So is that how you grew up as a boy, just around all this produce?
Mainly seafood. Seafood was big. Bit of a culture shock when I moved to the big city, Adelaide. People just drop whiting off to you, squid, anything. Australian, the salmon, it's just very common for people to drop seafood at your door.
Yeah, how far is it from Kangaroo Island?
You'd have to buy a car, probably about 12 hours.
Yeah.
You'd have to drive by a boat. I think it's still a good 6 hour boat trip.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a fair way down the peninsula.
Yeah.
And you said it was on the Fleurieu Peninsula.
Adelaide's on the Fleurieu Peninsula, Port Lincoln's on the Eyre Peninsula.
Okay, yeah. And I think that's what people don't understand, how important that peninsula is to the food that gets delivered to South Australia.
Yeah, that's it. And then in between the peninsulas, there's the Spencer Gulf, which has a lot of seafood. So Spencer Gulf prawns, a lot of fishing comes from there, so it's good.
And what else is growing out there?
Crabs. We get a lot of crabs. Oysters, obviously. Fish is in abundance. Squid. Anything seafood.
Wine. Is it wine country or beef country?
In Port Lincoln, there's some small few wineries, nothing major. Obviously, they have all the sheep and cows and everything. Everything is there.
What was it like growing up there as a young boy?
Great.
Yeah. Great. What did you learn from that? Did you want to, do you want to be a fisherman? Did you want to be a cook?
When I grew up, it was all just sports, like it is in every country town.
AFL?
Yeah, AFL here. Yeah. Cricket in the summer, AFL in the winter, a little bit of baseball in between. It was just, it's all heavily sports. It's just sports. That's all you want to be when you grow up. It's a famous athlete.
Until you started watching a TV show. Tell me about that.
So growing up, we were probably lower middle class. Single mum, four kids. My sister moved out by that point because there's no university in Port Lincoln. So she'd gone to Adelaide, which is where we are now, to go to university. So I was probably... Yeah, growing up, I guess we were lower middle class, you'd say. Mum was working 40, 50 hours a week, single parent. I've got two brothers and a sister, all older than me. My sister had moved out at that point to go to the city, Adelaide, where we are here now, to go to university. So probably from about 11, I was cooking dinner for both my brothers and myself.
And you were the baby cooking dinner.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they weren't interested.
Not interested. So I had some signatures, bolognese, spaghetti bolognese, tacos, sausages. All mince-based, you know, we're talking 18 years ago, 17 years ago.
Oh, and would your mum come home and you'd have dinner cooked?
No, she wouldn't come home. She was working late nights, hospitality at that point.
Wow.
So, yeah, she would leave at 10 and get home at midnight.
Wow.
5-6 days a week.
So good.
I was cooking dinner majority of the time.
Yeah.
And then from that age, going to primary school, It's a little bit embarrassing, but Huey used to come on, Ian Hewinson, about 3:30.
Oh my God, I so remember him.
Yeah, Cooking with Huey.
He was out and about always, wasn't he?
He was always out somewhere, he was on the Yarra or something. He's always having someone in the background. Terrible if you watch it now, I think. But yeah, I used to pretend being in a cooking show and cooking dinner and...
Again, your brothers weren't doing that.
No.
They were probably kicking the footy outside.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I always say to chefs, female, male, you're born with it.
Yeah.
It's something that you are born with, the love of food.
I think I was the only one that showed interest. My mum was cooking. I was looking over her shoulder like, oh, you put those spices into the bolognese. If back then it was the old Italian herb mix whatever, but...
It worked.
And then...
So what do you think Huey taught you?
I think it was just like he was passionate about cooking and he was just very relaxed about it. It wasn't a chore. Mm. It was something that I enjoyed doing, obviously, and then obviously he portrayed that he enjoyed doing it as well. So from a young age, I just enjoyed cooking. My brothers were like, what's he doing? Like, why would you want to do a chore like cook dinner? But I just enjoyed it.
And it was quite woman. It was quite the woman's job, wasn't it, back then?
Yeah, yep, yep. So, yeah.
And so how do you go from kind of being inspired by... Huey growing up in that really rich seafood bowl to then becoming an award-winning chef?
So I started cooking when I was about 14 in a local sports club, I guess.
Had you left school?
Or? No, I was still at school. I finished school at 3 and head straight there. I guess the local sports club or footy clubs are a bit like, I'm not sure if you have them on the East Coast.
100%.
Yeah, they're just like...
I grew up in Melbourne,
though. Snitties and steaks on the Thursday night for after training, and then, Friday night as well. So that's where it started, which was good. It was enjoyable. Pocket money for the weekends. A little bit, mainly doing dishes at that age, 14, on the deep fryer on the busy nights, cooking the snitties. Few opportunities where I had to work by myself at the age of 15 for the whole kitchen. Obviously, only doing 10 covers, but that's still...
Responsibility.
You look back, it probably wouldn't happen again.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah, I love that.
Started from there. I did that for a few years just in between school. Finished school and then I moved to Adelaide and started my apprenticeship.
Where was that?
Started my apprenticeship at the Bryant Metro Hotel here in Adelaide, mm-hmm. which I didn't realise at the time, but a lot of the old chefs from around the city and the great establishments had moved there. Still a pub. But when I was going to TAFE at Regency here in Adelaide, I could go back and they could show me what like a Brumoise or Julienne.
Wow.
They all had that technique and they like really instilled it in me. And then they could tell that I was passionate about food, so we'd move away from the pub food during the day and they'd teach me stuff.
Right.
Like traditional French food and stuff like that. So then within about 2 years, my boss, obviously he caught on pretty quickly that I was keen and passionate. And he said, Cameron, we're going to finish all your TAFE work within 18 months. Normally it takes about 4 years to get through. And then you're going somewhere else. You're off.
Wow.
Yeah, he kicked me out the door.
Who is that?
Hubba, his nickname was. Ian Hayes.
You can really cite him as one of your mentors, right? Somebody that set you in the right
just
path.
Like, I think pub chefs normally get bad credit, but these were just all genuinely good people that had worked in really good restaurants. Burnt out, obviously.
But he was selfless, though, as well, to let you go.
They all were. Instead of going on their breaks during the day like they normally would, they would spend time with me.
Wow.
Yeah. Even classic stuff like souffles. You never do a souffle at a pub, but they knew how to do it from previously, and they were like, no, you don't do it like that.
So I guess they just had a real respect for the industry and wanting to sustain it with young guys like you.
I think so, and they just knew that I was on to bigger and better, so they were really pushing.
So where did you go?
I came to the Playford for another 2 years, originally.
We're sitting in the Playford today, newly renovated Playford.
Right.
So how long ago was that?
Before it was renovated. Probably about 8 years ago.
Yep.
Maybe 9 years ago.
Great place to start.
Yep. Which was under Tanya Takume, which was great. Very, very good. She was very tough, very strict. Obviously, having to be as a female head chef 10 years ago even, it wasn't very common at all.
Oh, yeah. We had a quick chat the other day about Bethany Finn being the first female chef at the Hilton Group. Are we talking around about the same time?
I think so. And it would have been, like, mind-blowing to some. But obviously, she was great. Another mentor as well, really pushing the cleanliness and, like, being on time and just...
chicks in the kitchen are good, man.
Oh, yeah. And the amount of times I've seen her go chest to chest with someone.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I love that.
Oh, she loves it.
Yeah. And so you took off after a couple of years at the plate, but then where did you go?
I actually went to Hamilton Island for a little bit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, about 12 months.
Chefs can do that. They can travel.
Yeah.
Love that.
That was another crazy experience.
Where did you work there?
I was based at the convention centre,
yeah.
But the idea with Hamilton Island is it's basically 90% privately owned,
mm-hmm.
so you can jump from restaurant to restaurant. But they have their big race week up there.
Yeah.
We were doing 7 a.m. till midnight, 6 days a week.
You learn really big events then.
Oh, yeah, which is great for here when we have our wedding centre as well.
Yeah.
So, but I'm talking events for 1,000 people,
yeah.
And you're not buying stuff in, you're breaking down 250 ducks and
yeah.
You're going for it.
Yeah.
But it's great again. I was doing 7 till midnight, rolling the next day at 7:05 and he drills you for being late. It's like little things like that, which is good for your character building and not being lazy, being on time.
So. You're not a hothead chef at all, are you?
No, nah, very relaxed, but I'm strict on if you're late, then you're late, and I don't stand for that.
Yeah,
that's disrespectful to me.
So. Oh, I like that, but you would handle it so well. So when you came back, did you come back from Hamilton Island to Adelaide?
Yeah, I came back for the opening of Mount Lofty House, the Hardy's Veranda restaurant.
Yeah, let's talk about that property, because not everyone knows that one either. And that's iconic in Adelaide.
Yeah, iconic. It's up on the hill, up on top of Mount Lofty, summit there. They did a big refurb, a big reopening of the Hardy's Veranda kitchen with Wayne Brown taking the reins of that, which was really, really good. We're doing degustation food, same stuff, serving desserts at 1 o'clock in the morning to guests. 7-course, 10-course. Yeah, really, really, really good. I really enjoyed that. Another one of, just another tick of the mentors teaching you another thing along the way. Just that next discipline of, if you're not chopping chives properly, they go in the bin.
Yeah.
100%.
But you're willing to learn, though. So that's what I mean about you've checked your ego at the door. Because if your ego is driving you, you're not learning.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
So
they obviously noticed that in you and wanted to nurture that too.
I love feedback. Because if you're not getting feedback, whether it's good or bad, then you're not learning at all.
Yeah.
If someone's just coming to you and just telling you what you want to hear, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
I want you to be like, Cameron, that dish is shit.
Yeah.
Like, just be honest and let's tweak it and let's get on with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was like the bit of an opening of if the food's not good enough, we don't send it.
Wow.
You know, some restaurants would be like, oh, next time, just cook the onions a little bit more. Whereas at that point, it's no.
But they have the price point up there too, right?
They did at that time. I think they changed a little bit now, but that was a real opening where if the food's not good enough, we just don't send it.
Yeah. And so where did you go after Mount Lofty?
Mount Lofty House, I was helping out. I was probably there for about 3 years. I was helping out a little bit here and there at other places, like friends that I work for. Mount Lofty Vineyard, I helped out a little bit down there in Lennon's Mill. I was just doing a bit of rock starring, jumping in for places.
Yeah.
Did that for about 6 months. Obviously, it's pretty common to get burnt out. I was burnt out after Mount Lofty House a little bit.
Really, yeah.
But that was the same. We were doing 8 a.m., 9 a.m. till midnight, sometimes 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Back again at 8.
Hard to sustain relationships, hey?
It's a pretty common thing, I think, where you're either burnt out and you say, I've had enough, it's been 2 years, see you later, and you move on to the next one, or you...
Do you think that's getting better? Because I just hate it when, I dislike it. Hate's a strong word. I dislike it when chefs get, really good chefs, get burnt out and they leave the industry.
I think we... Previously it was like, you'd work 2 years, get a little bit burnt out, take your 4 weeks annual leave, come back to the next, probably next best restaurant or next.
Okay.
That's was pretty common in the fine dining industry anyway.
Yeah.
You'd see blokes that would jump from that restaurant to the next best one and then that'd all kind of rotate.
Yeah.
Within Adelaide anyway.
Yeah. Which is the birthplace of food and wine in Australia.
Yeah, that's right.
As I've said to you before.
To put it frankly, I think we've created a little monster with COVID. Obviously, international students weren't here for a long time.
Mm.
A lot of people left the industry during COVID.
Staff, yeah.
Yeah. And now there's a real demand for staff, and it's you have to offer either 4 days a week or 5 days maximum 10 hours.
Price.
And maximum 10 hours a day. That's what people want.
Well, maybe that's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing. It is a good thing moving forward because we have to adapt.
And it's sustainability.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So did you come back to the Playford after Lofty and a few friends?
Yeah.
What drew you back here?
What drew me back? That's a good question. I've always had a soft spot for the Playford. I've always loved it here.
Can you describe the Playford? Because you're from Adelaide and I'm not. But I often say it's the stately historic hotel. It's iconic. Can you just describe it as you see it as somebody born in the state?
I think you pretty much nailed it.
Oh, did I?
Yeah.
Okay.
That or the easiest way for me to explain it, it's across the road from the Intercom, which is another classic big hotel.
Yep.
I'd be like, oh, is that really...
The top River Torrens as well. Yeah.
Really,
AFL.
Really nice old building on the corner of North Terrace and Victoria Street.
And not too big, so it's kind of like, it still has an intimate feeling to it.
Yeah, we're only about 130 rooms, which is quite small, especially with the new hotels popping up there. The Sofitel is like 250 plus, huge. So, yeah, we can really do those finer details when it comes to room service and check and pick guests in and pushing them down to the bar if that's the way to go.
Yeah, and so while we're talking about Adelaide as a city and South Australia as a state, can you sing the praises of the produce as you know it, a chef that's been working here for a long time? Tell me about, you know, the native ingredients here, the wines. Just talk to me as much as you want about the produce of Adelaide.
Yeah, well, how could you
South
not?
Australia.
Like, we have the Barossa, obviously. Barossa Valley's an hour from the city. Macarran Vale's 45 minutes away. Obviously, Barossa, we're talking like Rockford wines, Torbreck, like the list goes on. Seppensfield, it's all out there, premium stuff. Penfolds, they get their wine from everywhere. Obviously, South Australian always has been. There's heaps. Turkey Flat, you just could go on and on. Macarran Vale, same again. There's some premium stuff popping up there and really starting to come through.
And the producers, like, what do you see out there that's different from anywhere else? Like dairy, meat, breads.
I think a lot of people say about Adelaide, it's like a small, large country town, right?
Brisbane.
Yeah.
But those days are gone, man. Like, people have moved here, and same with Brisbane.
But it is. It's still a large country town. I can, like, ring up my mate who's actually a cheese farmer, and we're just having a chat. We're not talking about cheese or anything. But I'm just asking how your weekend was, what's going on. Oh, by the way, can I have 2 kilos of... Montpresilla, that's the Section 28 up in Woodside.
Now tell me about Section 28, because people talk about this and I don't know enough about
it. He's big now, big now. He's providing all the big restaurants and he's everywhere. Kim Master, he's a champion guy out of Section 28 in Woodside. Woodside's about 25, 30 minutes from the city, up in the hills. Started off really small. He does French-based cheese. European-based cheese. Yeah, started off super small out of like a shipping container. He turned into like an aging room.
And what was his background? Had he been to France? He
was a banker.
So is the gin makers. Bankers, I found out yesterday, turn into gin makers and cheese makers.
I think they're smart people, that's why.
cash behind them.
And then I think he went and did some training in France and a little bit in Italy.
Yeah.
Went over there for a bit and then bring it back. But when I first met him, he was super, super small, just starting up. I was at Chris Lloyd, which is across the road, which is another big cheesemaker. I just Googled this place, it popped up and it was across, like, literally the next street over. I was like, rang him up, he happened to be there, and he just walked me straight through everything. So this is all our cheeses.
What was he making?
He was making his Monforte at the time, that was basically it. He had probably one other cheese on the go. I mean, now he's got a range of 8 to 10 that are all seasonal. Some of his cheeses he makes all year round, but he does have a seasonal range
as
well.
And why Section 28 as in the table?
I'm not sure, actually. I haven't asked him about that.
Yeah, I feel like it's like a section of the restaurant.
Mm, could be.
Cheese. I made that bit up.
Yeah.
Alright, so what else have we got out there? We've got, like, cows and game.
Got everything. We've got Handel venison up there as well.
Yeah.
Everything. I think Adelaide being so central and so close to the water, then also so close to the hills, which produce a lot of food and natural, like they have the meat and everything out there.
And climate.
Yeah, climate's a big one. And then, we also have the Adelaide Hills wine region as well. Bird in Hand.
Lot 100.
Lot 100's out there. That's a big one. amazing.
Something that I love about Adelaide, like, I mean, I always sort of, whenever I write about Adelaide, I sort of start at Hayes, and that iconic building. And then I walk down Arundel Mall, and there's just so many local family owned business, like the watchmaker, the candlestick maker, like they're all there. So when we say big country town, that's what we say.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the families that have kind of been here for many, many generations and landed here from England many moons ago that have just established themselves as small business owners and continue. Like, the history here is crazy.
Yeah. The Playford, for example, is still family owned here where we are.
Yeah. Now, tell me about this building. Do you know that this was the original Murdoch News building?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me about it.
Burned down, I think.
Oh,
actually, yeah.
Shoot, I didn't know that. Yeah, I feel like it's been here forever.
Nah, it's not an old building. I think it's only 40 to 50 years old.
Yeah, but wasn't it Murdoch's first, his father had this and the first paper that came
That's
out
right.
from...
That's right, yeah. The first news SA. Printing, yep.
Yeah.
Was here, so... yeah, a bit of history there, and then... I think there was a fire after that as well. That burnt down, or even part of the building burned down.
Yeah, right.
So we do reflect on that a little bit and the Murdoch story as well.
Yeah.
Do some like cocktails loosely based off that too, so.
I like that.
Yeah,
it does
yeah.
definitely feel like it's got the walls could talk in this
Yeah.
Building.
We actually get that sometimes from flight attendants that stay here.
Yeah, what they say?
We refuse to stay on a certain floor.
Well, why?
Because the walls are talking to me.
Oh, okay.
We won't go into that though.
No. So when did you get your first executive role?
Probably about 12 months now. I was a restaurant head chef here for about 2 years, just focusing on the restaurant. I go up to banquets and give a hand when I'm needed, but probably about 12 months ago I was made executive chef.
Wow.
Yeah.
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
29.
Oh,
currently.
So you're rocking it. You've done the hard yards though, and you've progressed and listened and learned throughout those steps. So what do you think they saw in you to be, what are the traits that made you the executive chef?
Well, we're pushing every day. That's a big one. I'm not a big, like, I'm pretty humble. I'm not big on ego. I leave that at the door. Unless we're in the thick of it and someone's got to make a decision, I'll make that decision. Whether that's front of house with service or anything. If I don't like something, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
But you can also tell me, like, hey, camera, I'm not... I'll ask you, but I'll almost suggest it. If you have a better idea, I'm all ears.
An open platform.
Oh, yeah. But if you're wrong, I'll tell you as well. So.
Yeah, so what was it about the food that you bring to this offering that you think that made you the executive chef? What were you producing? What was it?
We do, like, fine dining, casual food here. I'm just aiming for, like, super tasty food, essentially, which you would have experienced last night.
I wouldn't mind you... it was actually the night before. How long ago? I think I moved into this hotel. Can you talk me through some of the dishes we had the other night? Like, you did something with duck on a waffle. You had some really unique flavours, but still had that really simple edge to them.
Yeah,
can you talk
yeah.
me through that?
I think, my philosophy, my vibe kind of is like super tasty but simple, but you can't make it at home. And then you kind of thinking like, geez, how did he make that?
And it's a signature Cameron
dish.
So for example, what is the duck waffle vibe?
Confit duck inside the waffle batter that then we'll be pressing the waffle, and then duck pate on top with some pickled shallots. Yeah, simple,
beautiful.
Simple, delicious.
And the souffle?
Cheese souffle from Section 28. And then I do little rocket salad on top with some like candied pecans, fresh pear, and then just a cheese espuma on top to
round
it out.
And what was the smoking one?
We do a little cured Port Lincoln kingfish with some pickled beetroot on a beetroot cracker.
Oh, that was unbelievable. Now let's talk through some of the mains.
Mains, I like to keep it pretty... It's tricky because we are a hotel. We're a restaurant within a hotel. We try to define ourselves as Luma away from the Playford Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
But we still do get those corporate guests in like yourself. Big money podcasters that come in and whatever.
Because they're corporate and me. I think you meant creative.
Yeah. But they only want dinner for one and they might just want a main course. So we still have to be aware of that. So then that's where I reflect on that super tasty, delicious food. Blue cheese gnocchi is another simple one.
Oh, nice.
It's like super tasty. We're doing beef with Pom's puree at the moment, just like charred onions, really nice bone marrow jus over the top. What's another one? We're doing a pork scotch that's slow cooked with like a local artichoke and artichoke puree.
Oh, that's a nice combo.
Yeah.
And there's also the Bombay Alaska.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that dessert.
Yeah, desserts, we push the limits a little bit. We try to. I think people, when you finish on desserts and it's amazing, then...
Oh, yeah. Honestly, if you finish on a crap dessert,
yeah.
I won't remember the rest of the meal.
No, you won't. You'd be like, where was that place where I had a crap dessert? Mains were good. I can't remember what I had, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so we... Bomb Alaska, we flame at the table, like classic style. Really nice touch. It's good.
Something on the base, though, that was really unusual.
We have a pecan sponge. The parfait inside is maple and pecan.
Nice.
So maple syrup and pecan. Then there's a smoked chocolate centre. When you get right through, it's a little
it's
bit
Canadian,
salty.
Very Canadian, almost, that one.
Yeah, I know, but geez, it's good.
Yeah, really geez, good. And so when it comes to things like high tea, and I mean, this usually historic hotels offer some sort of an afternoon tea. What do you guys do?
We do high tea on Saturday and Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
Not at all a traditional high tea. Like, we don't do little finger sandwiches or anything like that. It's more of a window into what we do with Luma. So think like oysters,
oh, nice.
Little duck pativiers, the cheese souffles on there, lots of little desserts. Still the classic scones, because you can't go wrong with scones.
You have
to do scones.
I had a native ingredients, indigenous ingredients high tea at the Pan Pacific in Melbourne recently.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was such a great edge to add to high tea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we dabble in a little bit of the native stuff because it's all easily accessible here in Adelaide, very easily accessible. Finger lime, bush tomato, yeah, there's a lot of it around that's very easily accessible.
And what do you like to eat?
I'll eat anything, actually. It's
right.
Funny, I do not dislike anything. If you put something in front of me, I'll eat it and say it was nice.
But if you had a night off and someone was cooking for you, what would you want them to cook? Spaghetti bolognese.
It's all nostalgia though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's 100% nostalgia. It's what you grew up on. Mine is old school tacos.
Yeah.
Beef mince with the packet on top. That's what I ask.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I would rate that.
Yeah.
Now, you do look like a younger version of Huey. Better looking. So, is there a TV show in you?
Possibly. Could be.
You've got the right personality for it.
Yeah.
Have you done many interviews and sort of any kind of media stuff?
No, not at all.
Well, hey, let's
get
it
out
today.
There.
So you're award winning in the sense of a hat. Talk me through the other awards that you've had.
Yeah, pretty lucky to get a hat, just the one hat, but still great.
Well, you're at the helm.
We've only been open since September, actually, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not just a year.
So
yeah.
That's a really good achievement for that.
Mm.
I've been winning some awards for, if you haven't seen Lumen, we've got this big light sculpture.
Who did that? What's the story?
I'm not sure the architect that did it, actually.
Yeah, but the story is like weaving the... interactive sculpture through the hotel towards the light.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So when you check in at reception, you can see it kind of draws you down there, and then you come in. Looks sensational at night.
And it's great in an old building to have a contemporary piece on the roof.
Yeah. Which I think actually reflects our menu and the Bomb Alaska and our dinner service as well. Yeah, it really reflects.
The award, I think you got a hotel award recently,
yes.
For the restaurant too.
Yeah, I think that was best design as well for the bar and restaurant with the lighting sculpture.
Well, your name was mentioned in the article, so there you go. Watch out for this young man. Now, what does the future look like for you? Are you happy here and going to settle and just expand on what you're doing?
I think we're going to keep pushing for a little bit. Originally from Port Lincoln, obviously. I would love to start up a cellar door, nose to tail situation. I think that's a dream for everyone, every chef, every single chef. I think that's a dream.
Okay, so you didn't say restaurant, which is really smart because there's no bloody margins in restaurants. I've owned one and I can put you off that immediately. When you say cellar door, nose to tail, that sounds like a real kind of farm gate vibe.
Yeah, almost. Not cellar door, but I've been cellaring my own wine personally on the side.
Have you?
Yeah,
really. Tell me about that.
Just South Australian. I'm big on South Australian wine. Premium, well, semi-premium stuff. I'm not
sure.
What
sort of varietal?
Mainly red wines, a bit of white.
When you say bottling, do you know someone with a vineyard? What's been going on?
I just purchase a lot of what I...
Oh, I thought you meant you were making it.
No.
Cellaring it. Okay.
Yeah. So purchasing wine for potentially the opportunity to sell it in the future.
Have you talked to the Somm at Sofitel?
No.
Oh, you need to talk to him. Yeah. I can't remember his name. He has got, I don't know how many, 5,000 wines cellared, and he just bought one of the Penfolds.
Yeah.
He was telling us last night for 5,000, it's currently worth 25,000.
Yeah.
He's an older gentleman. You've got to go and hang out with him.
Go and have a chat.
In fact, I thought he'd be really good on the podcast, but yeah, if you talk to him, you're going to be spending a shitload of cash on wine.
But yeah, I think like Rockford Basket Press.
Yeah.
I really like Turkey Flat Grenache. Just things that I like to
try.
Yeah, underrated,
the
rosé, I think.
The Fiano.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Tempranillo. That's a really good... Oh, sorry, that's the rosé.
Yeah, the rosé.
Where else did we go yesterday? We went somewhere else. I can't remember where it was, but we went to another winery just before there. Do you know what our itinerary looked like yesterday?
No.
Well, it was very huge, and like I was still getting over the meal from the night before. But that also had... I love the European flair to some of these wineries we visited yesterday, because they just had a bit of a Pindari. Pindari had the amazing Tempranillo and a Fiano.
Yeah.
The winemaker Wendy had spent quite a bit of time over in Europe. I like the lighter style of the European wines.
Yeah.
Because you guys are known for your heavy body Shirazes, which is not.
Especially the Barossa, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, these guys were saying when we were tasting their blend of Cab Sav, Sangiovese and Shiraz that it wasn't an aggressive Shiraz, and I was like, oh, what do you mean by that? And they're like, well, usually it's got a real punch in it.
Yeah.
And having grown up in the Mornington Peninsula, we have the same sort of vibe. Now, it comes with a colder climate, but you don't need to have those big bodied.
I think that's just a classic Barossa Shiraz. It's just big and punchy and bold. Not for everyone.
Yeah. Have you tried the Shiraz gin that won the award?
Yeah.
That's great. Have you? So, just on that, do you do any boozy food? Do you cook with any of the local spirits?
The Bomb Alaska, we are 100%.
Yeah.
We're using the 23rd Street distillery whiskey to flambe that.
Yeah.
We do a little bit with Prohibition gin. That's pretty
nice.
Big. Yeah, we use them a lot. He's a really nice guy.
Did I already tell you about the Pedro Jimenez on the duck pate at Turkey Flat?
No.
Okay, it's one of the best things I've ever had other than your menu.
Yep.
Was the pate with a fermented, what is it, the gel, the fat?
Yeah.
With Pedro Jimenez from there.
Yeah, man,
that was next level.
I'm a big fan of Pedro as well.
I'm going to take it with me back to Brisbane. It's going to smell like all hell, but I'm
doing it.
Yeah, I'm going to take it back with me. So as far as like the future goes, you're just going to keep like doing what you're doing here, working with this great team here, the general manager of the team, fantastic at Playford. And what about some of your interests outside of work? What do you get to do other than sell a wine and drink it?
Yeah, that's it. Big sports fan still, obviously, being from the country.
Who are you brag for?
To be honest, I just love watching footy.
Okay, so who are you going for
AFL, that is. On the weekend, Collingwood.
Oh, man, why would you do that?
Not a big Brisbane supporter.
Oh, well, that sucks. We were friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm Bombers, but I would never go for Collingwood. So Brisbane Lions all the way, living in Brisbane. What is it about Brisbane you don't like, my friend?
Do you know what? I think it's just Joe Dunno. I don't like him.
Oh, okay. Well, he's Essendon, so you could hate Essendon and still like Brisbane. Yeah, so would you have an event here for the weekend on the grand final? if you guys were in it, you would.
Yeah. Not in the city. It's, I think, being in the city, we don't get a lot of traction from it.
Yeah. Unless an Adelaide team was playing.
Oh,
you would be going nuts.
We'd be going hard.
Yeah. And now tell me something. What would be some advice for some young chefs that wanted to enter the industry?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I think for any industry, anything you do, I always think, if I did that 10 hours a day, I would get pretty good at it pretty quickly. That's anything. If you were bike riding 10 hours a day, anything. If you were running 10 hours a day, I mean...
But you'd have to love it though, right?
Yeah, you still have to be passionate, but if you're in there and actually passionate and doing it 10 hours a day, you're going to pick up stuff
super
cool.
Yeah, right.
But I'm about that with anything. If you've got the technique and the right people showing you, and if you do the time, you'll get there very quickly.
I always end my podcast with who and where inspires you around the world. It's a travel podcast. So firstly, is there someone that, or I think it's all the chefs that in the pubs that were teaching you, is it a group of chefs that have inspired you?
I think you draw inspiration as a chef from everywhere. It's not like I don't think right now, where do I draw inspiration from? You get it from everywhere. When you go out to dine, you'll draw inspiration, be like, wow, their food's better than mine, I need to keep pushing. That's inspiration. When you go to the central market, there's inspiration there, the food is all there.
Because... I forgot time to go before I get on the plane.
You should.
Totally forgot to do that.
You should.
How far is that from here?
About 10 minute walk.
Okay.
Yeah. I go there most, probably every second or third day.
Fantastic.
So that's inspiration as well. You're not, like, you, I think as a chef, you need to draw it from everywhere.
Is
that
open every day?
I think it's shut Monday, Tuesdays.
Oh, that's it.
Or limited Monday, Tuesdays.
My friend told me I had to get some chicken situation going on there.
Oh, there's heaps going on.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
Yeah.
And then Chinatown, like, backs right onto
it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, like, if you're down by the beach, you might see something and then there's inspiration. And then you talk to a local producer that's got free range eggs, that's more inspiration.
Is there somewhere off this island called Australia that inspires you?
Food wise, I'm pretty simple. So I see and then I'm like, yeah, let's go. It's more about what I've seen. I haven't really done Europe. Went there when I was younger for a quick holiday, but nothing special. So.
Because something I noticed about the menu, it was European inspired.
Yeah. But that's more like my style of food from where I've worked previously as well.
Yeah.
Like you pick that up along the way and then that kind of becomes easier for you. And that's the vibe we're kind of going for, which is European. Yeah, European. But it's tricky these days with food concepts. Because like, what's Australian food? What's Australian food to you?
Oh, it's super, like, global.
Yeah.
Like, it's because I grew up in Melbourne, you know, we always had access to Vietnamese, Italian.
Yeah.
Now I live in West End in Brisbane half the time, and that's, I just seek out anything to do with the Mediterranean, always.
Yeah.
But I love that. I'm not, like, a massive Asian fusion girl. I'm just a basic Asian girl.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, So, concept is European, but then I just refine it back to, like, simple and delicious food that has that little twist of European to it.
Yeah, your menu is a really easy menu to eat.
Yeah.
You haven't complicated it. I don't like complicated menus. I can appreciate the creativity behind a dish, but just don't whack too much in there for me.
Yeah.
So actually, to be honest, my stomach can't handle it.
I like menus that read well as well, that like really flows,
exactly.
Which is where we're getting with that. Really trying to push myself with that. Pushing myself to get out on the floor a bit more as well. I talk to my front of house a lot about read the guests and see if they want the chef to come out or not.
Oh, I love that.
Because I'm a bit, like if I go out for dinner, I'm spending time with my partner because I don't get a lot of time to do that.
Yeah.
I'm a bit hesitant when chefs come over and interrupt.
So
I just get them to read the room.
I love that.
If they're loving it and they're really like extroverted people, then I'll come out. After I do the bomb Alaska, I'll hand the flame off to someone else and I'll just sit there and have a chat for 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, I saw you do that the other night.
Yeah.
And so is it great working for like a core and a hotel, like being involved with a hotel brand?
A core's great with the benefits that we have.
Yeah. Both my boys are working for them over in Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're not chefs though.
No.
But they're working front of house, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really good, they look after their stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's hard to sort of leave a hotel once you've been a chef in a hotel. Do you think so?
I think so as well. You get a lot of benefits.
And the resources. Yeah.
A lot of people are around you to support you, especially as a head chef. Like we have the sales team and the marketing team.
Yeah.
Rooms division that can tell you all the room rates that you need. So it's really, really good and they support us a lot.
Yeah.
So.
Well, when you've had enough in hotels and you open up your cellar door and your nose to tail.
Yeah.
What would we call that? A nose to tail. I'm not going to call it a restaurant. Just be a nose to tail.
But then, so that's where, do I work a full-time job during the week and then in the summers every Saturday for 10 weeks just do like a nose to tail and open up the cellar wine for everyone to come and try?
Where would that be?
In Port Lincoln.
Oh, fantastic. You say that's a lot of travelling for you, but well done. Shout out to Mum too for bringing up four of you and working her butt off.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm sure she taught you some very good things along the way there. Lovely to chat today, Cameron. Thank you.
No, thanks for having me.
Adios.
Thank you.